Blog Talk Radio.
You ever wake up so hungry that you want the biggest breakfast ever? You might want to give this a shot. Introducing the new Supreme Breakfast Sandwich from Burger King. Two sizzling sausage patties side by side, crispy bacon, eggs, and melted cheese on a long toasted bun. I know that's a lot. Did you get it all? Here it comes again. The Supreme Breakfast Sandwich at Burger King. Two sausage patties and bacon, eggs, and cheese on an extra long bun. Try the new Supreme Breakfast Sandwich now, only at Burger King. Price and participation vary.
Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Refractive Thinker Radio Show, hosted by the award-winning and international best-selling author, Dr. Cheryl Lentz, the academic entrepreneur. Meet the scholars of the award-winning doctoral anthology series, The Refractive Thinker, where we focus on getting doctoral research off the coffee table and into the hands of business owners who can benefit from the results. Join us each Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time for 30 minutes of thought-provoking radio designed to discuss emerging topics in higher education and business. We will meet today's industry thought leaders and college professors leading the way. Details can be found at www.refractivethinker.com. Now, here's your host, Dr. Cheryl Lentz.
Good morning, everyone, and happy Tuesday. I am Dr. Cheryl Lentz, the academic entrepreneur, and welcome to another 30 minutes of Thought for Token.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Lentz. My apologies for some technical difficulties this morning. Welcome and happy Tuesday morning. I am Dr. Cheryl Lentz, the academic entrepreneur, and today we have a very unique subject for you that has been really been in the wind between colleagues and friends and family and students. It's the idea of tapping the power of patience and persistence. The challenge becomes is how close do we get to our goal and how quickly might we pass by our goal simply because we're impatient. There is a great book by Greg Reed and Sharon Lecter called 3 Feet from Goal, and it's an amazing book that offers the ability of, oh my gosh, sometimes we are so very close to where we want to be and we give up right before the victory. And so this is a very interesting topic to be able to look at. How long should we be patient? How long should we be persistent, and how difficult it is to do both? I have many students this week that are nearing the finish line for graduation, and they are very, very tired, I guess would be a good word to say, frustrated because it's been such a long journey, and each one of us who's gone through the doctoral office opportunity has had their own stories to tell, and they're often emotional. They're often the difficulty about what do we do when we look at getting so close to the finish line. How do we go ahead and stay in the fight, and we know when it's to cut our losses or when it's to just hang in there? Because particularly in the doctoral journey, the longer it goes on, the more frustrating and emotional can be. And as we've talked here before, the challenge has always been about that emotionality. The writing part is not as difficult as the what we call the drama and the trauma. The going through many, 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 many layers of a review, many, many difficulties of why we want to be able to finish at the goal and how close we are. But it's really about attitude. It's about frustration. It's about having all of the sidesteps, the challenges, the delays, the things we didn't expect. And so we're looking at the ability to, how do you manage this change and the uncertainty? How do you maintain continuing on the journey to follow your path in what may seem sometimes like an endless road? I remember thinking that it was simply the light at the end of the tunnel was always an oncoming train. And one day I looked up and suddenly it was the end of the tunnel. And I was so fatigued and so tired that I remember when my mentor, Dr. Hall, calls me. And I remember sitting at the bed and there wasn't a marching band. There wasn't a clap of lightning. There wasn't a huge momentous. It was just a quiet passing of it's over. And I remember just sitting there because I just woken up and it was such a, really? Are you sure this isn't a dream? This is really kind of an opportunity to be able to look at why this was such a long journey, because I was so frustrated. I was so tired. I was so fatigued. This took me more than 4 years and 3 months. I was the first of my group that was to finish, and the challenge that became a wow, simply exhaustion, and it was persistence. But I was just remembering that I expected to have that celebration like when I crossed stage. That was an amazing memory with all six of us that were there. But the day I got the call, it wasn't excitement. It was simply, oh my gosh, it's finally over. And that resignation of, I need a nap. I need to relax. I need to finally step off stage because the goal has been won. And that surprised me a little bit because it did seem like such an endless road. In this book that I've been reading with Think and Grow Rich for Women, it's the women's version of the Napoleon Hill classics, Think and Grow Rich. And their point in Chapter 8 is really about this idea of persistence being the key to success. It's the weapon that often causes enemies such as the fear, the doubt, the negativity. And once you can just keep building on this, these negative aspects, these obstacles, these challenges, they simply crumble in front of you. But I know it's difficult because there were days that I could only take my journey 8 hours at a time or 8 weeks at a time. And it seemed so daunting, so the most difficult task I had tried up to that point in my career. And that was, gosh, more than almost 10 years ago now that I started, which was 2003. I finished in 2007, so 9 years now. And so the question is, what's the willpower and desire? Then the desire is what kept me going. I wanted to cross that finish line. I was too pregnant with the idea, so to speak, to be able to give up and to get too close to the finish line and not, you know, and not see it through to the end. But Napoleon offers 8 different factors and to overcome and to keep going. And one of them is the definiteness of purpose. And I always tell my students, put a goal in mind, put it on your picture board, put it on your vision board. What is the purpose? What was the goal? And you look at it every single day. I had a business coach once tell me, it's the why that makes you cry. It wasn't, you know, something that there was ever a doubt that it was non-negotiable, you would finish. It was not a question of if, it was a question of when. And there was that burning desire, factor number 2, the I have to finish, there simply wasn't another option. And this idea of self-reliance, and this is the one that's a big one for many of my students, because I know we turn the tables on the students when they stop going through their classes and they suddenly become in charge of their dissertation process. And that change can often be a challenge because it's much easier for most students when someone else is in charge. All we have to do is follow the syllabus created by the school, created by our faculty, and to go through this step by step by step. And then at the end of every class, and the end of every class, and the end of every class, and then suddenly we find ourselves in writing the dissertation. And the idea is, what happens now that we're in charge? The relationship flips. Instead of the student being the follower and following what the faculty and the university and their program and their learning objectives and their course objectives and their program objectives, the student is now in charge. And believe it or not, the student has been prepared with all of their classes, all of their rubrics, all of their templates, all of their learning, all of their foundation to now sift, sort, and separate through to find out what applies and what doesn't to their study. And this idea is their name is on the diploma. The faculty is now an advisor, a helper that will go as fast as a student will go. But many students get stuck in the ABD phase, which means all but dissertation. They get stuck very close because they're so used to having a plan designed by somebody else that when they are tasked with making their own plan, when they become their own project manager, when they are in charge of their to-do list, it becomes very daunting because now they're holding themselves accountable. And we faculty are still in charge of their grading, but the grading becomes more about what the university asks you to do at some point, but the student has to manage it on a week-to-week and a day-by-day basis. And so it's the self-reliance, and I have to remind them they're in charge. Their name is on that diploma. If they want to finish, and I've had students finish in a year, I've had students who finished in 18 months, I've had several take the full 5 to 7 years. And the idea is, when do you want it and when do you plan to get it? And how quickly are you going to go through it and what are you willing to give up to get there? And a lot of my students will note the short-term sacrifice, long-term gain. But a lot of this comes down to not only definiteness of purpose, but definiteness of plans. And they always hear me say, first we plan our work, then we work our plan. Then at the beginning of every term, we have a here's what we're going to do for the next 8 weeks. Some of my students made the plan for the entire here's the day I'm going to graduate. And then they work backwards. And so it's that outcome-based impact and plan and strategy of a here's where I want to be, now I'm going to work backwards, reverse engineer it, and have a plan to get there, a strategy that's going to move me forward day by day, week by week, term by term. Suddenly we get there. And first we plan our work. We're going to have the SMART goals. How is it specific and measurable and attainable and realistic and timely? And for me personally, and for many of my students, it's difficult to see the whole goal because I've never, at that point, I've never seen a goal beyond the immediacy of a 6-week class, a 5-week class, a project that was for a couple of months. This was a long project, and it was 4 years, 3 months from the time I started my first class to the day it was happy birthday, you're a graduate. And so we start off with the what do you need for knowledge, and that's factor number 5. And we prepare you for everything you need to know. The problem is there's 1,000 moving parts. And we as the faculty, when we're teaching our classes, and as the chair, the mentor, the advisor, when we become that role, we don't know in what order or in what sequence those light bulbs will turn on, and it's amazing when students may have heard the same thing I've said or others have said at residency or editors or people in the review process, and suddenly you can see that look in their eyes where it's like, oh, time stops. They get it. It's that spotlight that shines on there. They're like, oh, my gosh, you can't unring that bell, that moment of clarity. It's when the knowledge meets the, that's what it meant. That's what it is. Now I understand not only what it is, how to define it, but how to use it, how to apply it. And then we get to the next part, is when there are others that are in the process, particularly in the doctoral process, many schools will have up to 8 or more levels of review, up to 8 or more people that are part of the process. And we need to be able to look at, when we look at a mentor, there's a difference between a coach and a mentor. A coach knows the rules, a mentor's played the game. But when you have 8 or more folks, particularly at the doctoral level, that are going to render opinions and give you the idea of, well, here's how I might do it and here's how I might recommend. The challenge for the novice scholar that is emerging is, how do I know who's right? How do I know who's most effective? Because the whole idea is there are many, 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 many different ways to craft a doctoral journey. And the idea is if you had one chair, they would do it this way. If you had another chair, they do it that way. If you have all these different committees, and everybody's going to add their opinions, add their suggestions. And the budding scholar sometimes gets a little overwhelmed and intimidated because, at least in the doctoral process, anyone that's in a position of giving advice has a doctor title that they're hoping to gain. And so it becomes a bit of daunting. And I'm always very careful in how I wield that power of being the mentor, because I'm an example. I am the one who is supposed to be knowing all, and that's not always the case. Ideally, I know more than the student because I've completed the process. I've graduated 30 students now. But that doesn't mean that every journey is exactly the same as what has come before it. And so the challenge becomes, how do we as a group, as these 8 to 12 different levels of review or reviewers that the student has to sift, sort, and separate. And so I suggest to my students that whenever anyone gives you advice, you have to stand your ground to be able to know why they're giving you advice and whether or not that advice is effective for you. Just because somebody is giving you a doctor title or has that doctor title and is giving you advice doesn't make them right. They are one opinion of many. Yes, they've probably done this before. Yes, they've gone through, but never exactly the same. And so the idea is to be able to take their advice and saying there's a higher probability of success if you might take their advice, but there's no guarantee. And so now we're back to factor number 5, cooperation.
My students will also look at the idea of cooperate to graduate. There are many, and that's why there are so many different layers of review. Everybody brings something to the party. Everyone's going to have the opportunity to be able to say, well, if it were my see, here's what I see from my position, whether as a second committee member, a content expert, a URR, a second committee, a third committee member, the IRB, and the dean. We're all here and see things a little bit differently. My focus tends to be more on big picture content and specific detail editing. Methodology is something that I always look to others for advice as I am learning, because I am very well versed in what I did and I'm very well versed in a lot of what my students have done now. But the challenge becomes everything's a little bit different, and there's no guarantee that what has worked in the past may exactly work that way again. That's why in research we are connected on a continuum. Our efforts are based on the research that has come before us, hence the lit review in Chapter 2. And those, when we finish in our findings, will add to the greater body of knowledge for the point that somebody at some point will add to ours. And we keep moving the football forward since we're in football season. But the challenge becomes willpower and persistence and the patience of knowing there's sustained effort that's necessary to keep the faith. And some of my students have taken so long because they have allowed so many distractions to come in their path, distractions from family, from friends, from the job, from children, from just life in general. And it's difficult to balance priorities when it seems that everything's clamoring for number one. And very few students have I ever met that the only thing they're working on is their dissertation. And so the challenge becomes, if you are in charge, how are you holding yourself accountable? We all have the same time, the same money. We all have the same reasons we have to get across the finish line. But look at the difference of my students, that they did it faster than me. I had 3 students graduate in less than 18 months. Oh, I wonder at the opportunity of how my life might have changed had I had that option. The first one of my group, 4 years, 3 months, and the last one of us graduated in 5 years. But we graduated. It was the idea of persistence and that day by day, step by step, moving forward, sometimes centimeter by centimeter, just to demonstrate progress. And that's sheer willpower, sheer patience, sheer determination, sheer desire, and habits. The last part that my students will always hear me say is the idea of creating systems. And you'll hear that over and over with me. What is your writing system? What is your research system? What is your editing system? What is your cooperation system? What is your time management system? Every one of these has a system. And some of us tend to be better at that. I know I didn't have my systems in place, and I ended up writing my dissertation twice because I didn't. I thought the guidelines and the requirements were just that, a good idea to follow, but not etched in stone. And so there were a lot of things, and when I was looking at templates and rubrics and other things, that I wasn't that detail oriented, at least not in the beginning. These were skills I had to acquire. And now I'd like to think of myself as a pretty darn good editor who has a focus on this level of detail, to the point now that I can very seldom even enjoy a book, enjoy a magazine, or go to a museum without having misspellings and grammar issues just seemingly jump off the page. You can't quite unring that bell and unsee something. It can be very difficult. But that's how my students know that they have made that grade, so to speak. They have met that going, oh, Doc, see, I remember one student in particular, and she was such a hoot. I hadn't seen her for a few weeks. She had taken a bit of a leave from class, and she came back and she was re-editing her dissertation. She goes, oh my gosh, isn't this amazing? She goes, now I know why you've been so frustrated with me. Now I can see it. And I was so excited for her to be able to have that level of clarity finally come to her that I could see as plain as day, but I was on the other side of it. And so some of these factors that Napoleon Hill mentioned can be a challenge, and others may be quite easier for it. The secret is simple. You have to persist with all of them. First, we plan our work. Then we work our plan. Then we look at the others who are going to be in our path to help us. We don't go through life alone. No matter how challenging life may be, at some point in time, there will be others in our path, because sometimes we lead, sometimes we follow. Sometimes we ask for help. Sometimes we are the helper. And so when we look at that, is the weapon is to keep going, and that persistence, that ability to
The why that makes you cry is what I come back to all the time, is why are you doing this? What keeps you going? What gets you out of bed in the morning? What keeps you excited? What puts a smile on your face? What puts a scowl on your face? What gets you excited to be out? Some people and others, you just can't be around that kind of negative energy. And so at some point when you have this very daunting goal in front of you, those who pursue a doctorate are not for the faint of heart. These are not, this is not an easy journey, although I am envious of my student who was able to finish it in a year, because I can only imagine that his journey made it seem very simple, very easy. And for all of us, we have our own paths to travel. We have our own efforts and patience. For some of us, it may be procrastination. For some of us, it may be understanding the process. It may be elevation of scholarly writing. It may be time management. It may be attitude. It may simply getting her done. But there is a lot of things that, you know, many of my students, I have to teach them diplomacy, because they don't like when their opinions are challenged. They frustrate. I remember it took me a long time to look at the ability when people look at telling me that I was less than what I had hoped to be. I remember my committee member, oh my gosh, five pages of single space comments in red when the first time they looked at my proposal, chapters 1, 2, and 3. And I was just devastated. For 2 days, I did nothing but cry, going, holy cow. I mean, all I could see initially was I'm wrong. There is a mistake. I am not worthy. I am not going to be able to finish this. And it was hard for me to not see that this wasn't intended as criticism. This was intended as a gift. And she was one of my staunch and best supporters to be able to have the ability to move me forward and to see what could have been better. And unfortunately, the way to see what could have been better was to first identify what was wrong. And that was so tough on my ego. And so tough on, I don't want to do this anymore if people are going to keep beating me up. I don't want to do this if I'm going to constantly being criticized and constantly being told that I was less than. And the hard part, that's where we faculty come in. That's where we mentors come in. That's where we as coaches, and I probably spend more time in the world of psychology with my students, of holding their hand, teaching them diplomacy, teaching them patience, teaching them that I'm a safe place. And if they need to cry or vent or get mad, sometimes you just need to do that. And you need to have an open-minded audience who's going to love you anyway. And to know that not all of our moments are our finest hours. And until we learn to manage that angst, that fear, that doubt, that negativity, that lack of self-confidence, that inability to think we're worthy of this, some of my students have never experienced any of that. I went through a lot of that, particularly when I wasn't well supported by many in my family. It was difficult with, you know, both of my grandmothers passing away during that journey. Very few people understanding, friends and family at the time, of what this was like, because few even had a master's degree, and a master's degree and a doctorate are not the same. And so when you have folks who don't understand where you're coming from, they haven't traveled a similar journey, they've not gone through your path, very difficult. There's a wonderful saying by Ralph Waldo Emerson, is the ability to leave a trail or follow in someone's footsteps. It's far easier and left after effort to draft off of somebody else, to follow in their footsteps. That's supposed to be the guide behind parenting. It's supposed to be the ability to, you want to do something successful, find someone else who has done it and ask them to mentor you. And that's why I have business coaches over the years, is I don't assume that I know everything, and I'm not willing to wait to allow my experience to be the only guide I have. So as money has afforded itself, I've had many, many teachers. And it's amazing how wonderful and patient that they have been with me. And some of them have had to be tough love. And some of them have given me a hug when it's over, and some of them have held my hand and dried my tears, because it's always easier to go through the tough times when there are people supporting around you. And I know for many of us, some of our family aren't even there for us because they don't get it, they choose not to be, whatever it may be. And so you have to make your own family, and you have to make your own support network, and to realize you're not going to go through this alone, and you are never alone. It's a question of who are going to be in your path. I'm always amazed that seemingly at the lowest points that I can be, even in my doctoral journey, somebody would just simply pop out of nowhere, to offer me that, but Cheryl, look at what you've done, and help me with my desire, and help me hand in hand cross the finish line. They didn't abandon me. They didn't find something more important or dismiss me. They were there to support me, even though they might not have always understood exactly what I was doing. They were there to hold my hand. My grandmother was the master of this, Grandma Kay. And she would just sit there, and I remember when I was ill as a child or being punished as a child or even ill as an adult, she would simply put a cold cloth on my forehead, and she'd sit there and hold my hand and pat my hand. And I'm sure she didn't think that she was anything special, because she always told me, she goes, but there isn't much I can do. And she didn't realize that how much she did was amazing. And so I have learned from her as a phenomenal teacher that sometimes the only thing you need to do is to sit next to somebody and hold their hand, to listen to them, to listen to their dreams, to help them along the way, to sit with them. Because as you go forward, trials and tribulations will come and go. But they're so much easier when the people are around you to help you through them. And so I've always tried to be what I often didn't have in my life, is to be the kind of mentor I would have liked to have had, and that golden rule. And my grandmother was one of the best teachers. And the fact that sometimes all I do is listen. Sometimes I do is I offer the benefits of my wisdom, the benefits of others' wisdom, the benefits of my experience. And sometimes I just sit there and hold their hand and love them through the crisis. And I let them cry, I let them vent, I let them know, but I always make sure they know they are never alone. They are not going through all of the angst, whatever their issue is. And everybody's different. Not one, two person's journey is ever going to be the same. And so as a leader, I like to be the example and to lead by example and by leading myself. It's very difficult when you ask for help and you don't get it. And for many of my students, including myself, we don't always get that support and love we had always thought would be an unconditional forever from our families. So we have had to be our own support network. And I have friends around the world that are amazing. And when I have trouble with my students, when I have trouble with myself, my work, whatever it may be, I know how to reach out to them. And sometimes they simply just call me. And so let me offer the parting results, shall we say, as the things that you need to take away from this call today regarding persistence. Just like the title from Chapter 8, the sustained effort necessary to induce faith. Sometimes you have to have faith that whatever is going to be, that there will be people put in your path to help you along the way. I like to tell my students, your name might be on the front of the diploma. There are many people in invisible ink on the back, and some that you may only meet for a moment, some that may help you hold your hand, some that may carry you in different parts along the way. But the hard part sometimes is to ask for help for others who are strong when you are weak, for those who have wisdom and experience and knowledge that you need. And sometimes you just need a holding hand. And sometimes you need someone to smile and tell you it's going to be okay. And sometimes just to be able to love you anyway, despite some of your less than stellar moments. But that's where unconditional love really comes out, is you're supposed to love those near you regardless. And I know many people are incapable of that. And unfortunately, we have to find those people at those moments. And so I want you to be able to really look at these eight factors: definite of purpose, desire, self-reliance, definite of plans, accurate knowledge, cooperation, willpower, habit, and all the things we've talked about here today, to just keep going. And sometimes I know just waking up in the morning and putting one foot in front of the other is the best you can do, but the best is best. So long as you cross the finish line, so long as you find a way to keep going. And these are some difficult moments, but the lessons are far more than simply writing a doctoral dissertation. Some of these are very powerful life lessons in diplomacy and attitude and persistence and in faith and how to overcome challenges, how to keep going in the face of very undaunting odds. And yet those who persist are the ones who will be victorious in the end. So be a victor or not a victim. Keep going even when all things might point to being in a place that is very, very difficult and perhaps a little bit dark. And so I hope that this week you'll take some hope and some inspiration keep going, to keep smiling, to keep on keeping on. I'm Dr. Cheryl Lentz. I'm the academic entrepreneur, and we're so thrilled that you can join us every Tuesday morning for 30 minutes of thought-provoking radio. Until we meet again, keep thinking your way to success. Have a great week. Bye now.